Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Every Saturday morning, it's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Terry takes you inside the outdoors. You know, hunting, fishing, camping. It's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Now, here's Terry.
Good morning on this beautiful weekend day. You know, we got a chance this weekend of some showers, but we certainly could use that. But we did get a little break from this intense heat, the 100-degree temperatures. It's going to affect a lot what's going on in the outdoors. We'll make sure that's included in the show today. Going to get back to more seasonal temperatures now, but in a week or so, that means 90s. So it's going to stay hot and dry. We have a chance for a little rain. Hopefully, we'll get that. We're going to take you today, a little later on in the show, to a place where they're catching some huge trout. I mean, just giant trout. We're going to talk to them. We're also going to talk both big game hunting and walleye fishing with Nate Zielinski. Ronnie Castiglione is going to join us in the second hour. And we're going to talk both wet wading in some rivers, but also maybe some summer patterns and some what's going on in the fishing world all around. So we have a lot to cover. Let's go to the phones. Joining us, he's the editor of Trout Magazine. He's the editor-at-large for Field & Stream Magazine. And he's occasionally a fill-in host on this radio show. Among his many other accomplishments, he's a good friend of mine, Kirk Dieter. Good morning, Kirk.
Good morning, Terry. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I've learned to abbreviate your resume because it eats up the whole show.
It just means that I have to have a lot of irons in the fire to make a living, you know.
Yeah, that's what, you know, that's what I told somebody once. They said, I'm good at a lot of things. I just don't do much. But
yeah.
Well, you probably heard the intro, and I talked a little bit about this heat. And I know, you know, as the editor of Trout Magazine and part of Trout Unlimited, you take conservation is a huge part of what you guys talk about. And right now, this weather has probably put a lot of stress on the fish. A couple reasons. We haven't had the water in some places, and these temperatures were unusually warm. What are you seeing out there?
You're right, Terry. It's kind of a dangerous combination of low flows and high temperatures. And when trout are in water that's over, say, 65 degrees, certainly when by the time it's pressing 70 degrees, it's really just not good to catch them. And they die a lot if you do catch them, and even if you let them go. So we kind of encourage people to take their thermometers with them and either fish early in the morning or, you know, stay away from water temps that are 70 degrees plus. And we've seen that the last few days on the, like, Upper Colorado River, for example. So, but, you know, there's a lot of options, though. You can just go, let's go to the lake instead. Let's go to the pond. Let's fish for bass or fish for other species that are a little hardier. But those cold water temps are really important for trout. And sometimes it's better if we want to fish next year to really be careful about how we go about things this year.
Well, we've already had some closings. The Yampa below Stagecoach Reservoir has been closed because of the water temperatures and low flows. And just use some common sense. Like you said, take a thermometer with you. And you mentioned lakes, and I want to get back to that because I think that's such an incredible alternative through a good part of the year in Colorado that gets overlooked by fly anglers especially. But also, we have a tremendous number of high alpine lakes, like in Rocky Mountain National Park and in the Indian Peaks area. And we have a lot of small streams at those levels that there still is a little snow up there. The water is cold. So there are places you may just have to get off the beaten path and walk a little bit. And that, to me, is some of the essence of fly fishing anyway, Kirk.
Yeah, that's the reason we live here, right? It's beautiful to go for the hikes. And then if you can bring a rod along and get to the, like you said, some of the high alpine streams, they're just doing fine. And get off the beaten path and you find fish that are a little bit more eager as well. You can be using dry flies and simple casts and have a great time if you're willing to walk a mile or so. So that's a real bonus. And plus, you learn a lot fishing different types of water. Little streams are a little bit different. The lakes are a little bit different. You have different presentations. And so you round out your abilities as an angler if you try different things.
Let's talk a little bit about lakes. And let's start with trout in lakes. And we'll get to some of the other species, too. But You know, I came, and we actually both came from a conventional fishing background. We grew up in the Midwest, or my wife says I got older. She says I never grew up. And so our first fishing was usually spinning gear, but then we took to fly fishing later in life, and I do a combination. I think you do too. But anglers who grew up or learned fishing as a fly fisherman, fishing rivers and streams, sometimes have a very tough time adapting to fishing still water, because their whole fishing experience has been looking at the river and these seams and these current breaks are where the fish will be, and then using the current in the river to make your presentation to get it to drift through, where none of that happens on the lake, or not very much on the lake. And so you have to take a different approach. And I think it gets a little bit intimidating sometimes to fly anglers.
It does. You know, I think that the interesting thing about that is that there are some similarities. It's just a microcosm of what's happening on the river. And what I mean by that is when I'm fishing a river, I'm looking for changes in current, changes in structure, where there's rocks or logs or something, changes in the color, changes in the depth. And the same things apply if you're fishing in a lake. It's just a little bit harder to see them sometimes. There's changes in currents where there's inlets and outlets and so forth. There's drop-offs and shelves. That's a change in the depth. There's changes in structure because there's rocks and logs and so forth in lakes. So if you think about it that way and you just try to zero in a little bit more carefully, those same rules apply, and you can be successful fishing lakes by applying the rules that you use on the river.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And a lot of times, fish will be rising on the lake, and you can actually, they'll show themselves to you. The difference between a fish rising on a lake and a fish rising in a river is the fish rising in the river will come out of his holding spot. He'll rise up, take a fly or take a bug off the water. A fish rising in the lake, when he comes down, he might keep moving along and rise in a different spot next time. So you have to kind of watch the movements of those rises. But it can be the other thing, though, that fish in lakes can get really fat and happy. You can catch some extremely large fish in still water.
Yes, and extremely tough fish, too. And they're strong, and they pull, and they've got lots of different directions that they can go once you hook into them. So I've always thought that lake fishing was something that I look forward to every year, especially when this time of year rolls around. You've got some of the best hatches. You know, you've got the damselflies that are starting to hatch in some places. Calabatus is probably the best overall hatch, I think, for still water, and that's going to happen pretty soon. And it already is in some places, as you said when we were talking the other day. So it's a great time of year to be out on lakes.
Now, say there's a calabatus hatch going on. How do you approach a still water? I mean, if they're not rising, let's just start out they're not rising, but you know that you've heard, you know the calabatus are active in that lake. Do you start with a sinking line, or do you go to a floating line with maybe a longer leader under an indicator? How do you approach it?
I typically will fish a longer leader, like 12 to 14 feet leader, and then I still use a floating line, but I'll put a nymph on, like a gilled nymph or something small, and twitch it. You got to be very careful not to retrieve it very quickly, but maybe 1 inch at a time. If you make a cast in an area that you think looks fishy, let it sink a few inches under the surface, like up against a weed mat, and then twitch it a little bit. Pull it in 1 inch at a time, 2 inches at a time. And that tends to be the way that I'll go if I'm not seeing a heads on the surface and fish sipping bugs off the top.
Well, you know, you made a point about how you retrieve it, because in the river, a fly angler will concentrate on his line and his indicators or his dry flies, and he'll watch the drift, and he'll mend his line, and he'll try to keep a drag feed drift to get a real natural presentation. In a lake, you have to visualize, whether it's fishing a streamer like a minnow or a leech, where you can be a little more aggressive, or fishing a dry fly or a nymph, you have to be able to visualize in your mind what you're doing. If you strip in a foot or two a line, well, that calabatus never moves like that in the water, so it's going to look very unnatural. But if you take just two fingers and roll a couple inches of line in your finger, you'll be do that close to you where you can actually see the fly in the water, you'll be amazed how much you move that fly, or just the twitching of your rod sometimes. So you really do have to be able to visualize, don't you?
You do, and that's probably the most important tip I'd say for all still water fishing is being able to really match the forage. In other words, make your fly move like a minnow moves. Make your fly move like a nymph or, you know, aquatic insect would move. And you're right. If you're stripping them in fast, and it looked like a hydroplane boat, there's no way that a trout's going to eat that. So mastering that is really, I think, half the ball game when you're out there fishing lakes.
No, I couldn't agree more. And we have a number of lakes. We're going to take people up, actually, out to the North Park area. We're going to talk about that later in the hour. And they are catching huge fish in the lakes up there. Whether you're a fly angler or a conventional angler, you have a real legitimate shot at an 8 to 10 pound rainbow right now, or cutbow up in that, or brown up in that North Park area. And they're going to come on and tell us what's happening. Let's switch gears while we have a minute or two left. You also talked about other species. You know, every pond in the Front Range of Colorado has bass and bluegills and crappie in it. And a lot of our lakes are full of smallmouth bass. And there's no reason you can't go after those species with a fly rod. It's just a lot of fun.
It's a great way to improve your game and have a lot of fun and find some action when, we were talking about earlier, when the trout might be stressed in some places. Switch it over to bass. All you need is a little chartreuse and white clouser minnow fly and, you know, a 5 or 6 weight fly rod and a good leader and good floating line, and off you go. And it's, I mean, the world is your oyster when you're working it that way.
Oh, it's so much fun. And if you get a bunch of small bluegills and you want to teach a youngster to fly fish, a little nymph that you use on the river underneath an indicator, just a foot or two down, or a dropper, dry dropper, you'll just kill those bluegills. They'll get action on almost every cast. It's such a great way to approach it. Hey, did I ever tell you my Bob Clouser Lefty Crace story?
No, I'm not going to. No.
So Bob and Lefty were both on the radio show with me. And Bob says to Lefty, he says, "Lefty, do you remember the first time we fly fished together, what you asked me?" And Bob said, and Lefty goes, "Yeah." I said, "I asked you if you watch your back cast." And Bob said, "I said no." And Lefty said, "That's good, because I wouldn't want to look at it either."
Character. He was quite a character.
Oh, God. I'll tell you what. I miss Lefty. What a great guy he was.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed.
Yep. My friend, we are running out of time. Andy, what's coming up in Trout Magazine or Field & Stream or your other publications? What do you got coming out?
We've got some really cool issues coming out for trout specifically. And we're going to look at wildfire, because that's another topic that, you know, we in Colorado are going to have to face over and over again. We're certainly dealing with the effects from last year. And unfortunately, if as dry and hot as it is now, we're probably going to see some more of that this year. So we've got a whole issue on wildfire, how it impacts fish, impacts rivers, and how they recover. And so look for that in the summer issue of Trout.
How do I get Trout Magazine?
Join Trout Unlimited, please. It's tu.org, www.tu.org, and you can sign up and you get the magazine and membership, and you know you're helping out the fish and the fishing all over the country.
All right, my friend, we need to get on the water together.
We should. I'll look forward to it. Maybe go bass fishing. I'd like to do that.
All right, let's make it happen. We will talk to you again soon. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Okay, you too. Take care.
You bet. Kirk Dieter for Trout Magazine and Field & Stream, just a great friend. Him and I were very close with the late Charlie Myers, who kind of mentored us on some of the outdoor writing, and just developed the bond. Great guy, great fisherman, and just a good guy to talk to. We'll take a quick time out. When we come back, we'll have a Parks and Wildlife segment right here from Cheyenne Mountain Park on Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104.3 The Fan.